Thanks so much for being with us, everyone. We're talking with Dr. David Jacobs of Temple University, one of the few academics involved in researching this wild, wacky world, this alien abduction scenario, the possibility that alien hybrids walk among us. You know, on its best day, this field of endeavor is fraught with personal and professional peril for those who chase after answers to the mystery. David Jacobs certainly knows that very well. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, he's involved, embroiled in a really nasty fight, and it has implications not only for his professional standing, but also for the whole field of UFO abduction research, a lot of it focusing on the use of hypnosis and whether or not it's appropriate to use that with abductees. We're going to jump right into this mess as soon as we come back here on Coast to Coast AM. David Jacobs, you have been reluctant to speak publicly about this, this case that's caused you so much grief and might cause you more grief in the future. Why is that? And what parameters do we have for our discussion tonight? Where can we not go?
Well, you know, first of all, this will be the very first time I've ever talked about her in public, and therefore I've not been embroiled in a fight, the fight of my life, because it's just been one-sided. It's been basically 100% her, well, 99% her charges against me for any number of reasons, and 1% mine, because I put up finally in April of this year, I put up a short sort of defense of myself on my website. Other than that, I've never, ever, ever talked about her. I've never mentioned her name in public. I've never mentioned the dispute. I've never mentioned anything. So I'm not embroiled in a fight. I'm just sitting back and watching this thing swirl around. And you know, the UFO world mirrors the real world, so to speak. It mirrors the population as a whole. And people have... this woman is a very, very troubled woman, and I'm not going to say her name even now. And she's, as the phrase goes, she's a persuasive blamer. She's blamed me for any number of misdeeds and horrendous problems that I've caused her and everything. And when this all began, I began to consult psychologists and other therapists to figure out what the problem was and how do I deal with it. And the best advice I got from virtually everybody, and I talked with 9 therapists of one stripe or another, is to never, ever, ever talk to her, never respond to her, never talk about her, ever. And I've followed that very carefully. No matter what she said, and her charges against me have grown over the years, you know, and every time she listens to a tape of a session, she'll find some other charge against me or something. So I've taken that advice. The problem is that advice would work with certain people, with people who have certain personality disorders normally, but this is the internet age. And because the UFO population mirrors the society as a whole, there are going to be people who will believe almost anything, especially if there appears to be, quote, evidence, end quote. And no matter what it is, no matter what you say, no matter how crazy it is, there will be people who will not only believe you, but die to defend that thought, that feeling, that sense that they have that the person who was making the charges is right. And there are gullible people who just cannot tell right from wrong or can't look behind things. And there are people who try to make a buck off the deal. And all these things have happened as I've sat back and just watched. All these things have happened over the past 3 years, 3.5 years, because she has been relentlessly attacking me since 2007. And this just goes on and on and on and on and on. And it's I consider it to be obsessive. Most therapists, and of course, nobody can tell what she's like without meeting her or talking with her, and she does not live in this country. But most people I've talked to say that it does sound like it's you know, it's similar to people with something called borderline personality disorder, and which also has this very obsessive aspect to it. And so she has been kind of relentlessly attacking me. And every time I go on the air, I have to warn the host or the producer that they'll probably get a letter from her, you know, saying that I'm a criminal and all that. And they do, you know. And I warned your producer, in fact, that she was going to find out that I'm going to be on Coast to Coast, and she was going to send something, and she did, of course. And she if I appear at a talk at a conference or something, she will write to the producers of the conference and with MP3s of secretly taped phone conversations, with MP3s of hypnosis sessions that are obviously edited, because there are, all the hypnosis sessions are 2 hours long and so forth, she started out slowly, kind of after we broke away. She's the only person I ever broke off from. Every other person I've ever worked with, I've just, you know, they decide eventually when they've had enough, when they've learned enough, and that's it. And we may remain in touch and we remain friends and this and that. And that's the way it's gone with most people. But she is the only person that I ever actually made up my mind to break away from. Like I couldn't, because she was became so erratic as time went on, and that erratic quality I think is there for anybody to see, and certainly the obsessive quality of it is. But people just can't, they don't get it. So that's why I'm talking a little bit today. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about her. It's a complicated business. It went on for, I did sessions with her for a couple of years. I helped her in every conceivable way I could. I began to receive threats from her own, from her computer, just like I did with this other person. I received, it's a complicated business and it's hard.
Well, let's start it this way. Let's try this. You know, at the heart of this is a discussion of the use of hypnosis, and the use of hypnosis by an associate history professor who is not a trained psychiatrist or a clinical hypnotherapist or anything of that sort. I mean, you have heard this from within ufology before, from outside ufology, that people like you or Bud, even maybe John Mack, should not be doing this kind of stuff. You're not trained to do this stuff, and you can cause a lot of harm. How do you respond to that?
Well, we have never caused harm, as far as I know, and I've never caused harm either. She may have disliked some of the things that I said to her, but I've never caused any harm. The thing is that regular hypnotists cannot do this. People who do forensic hypnosis, like police, people who do hypnosis to stop pain, like dentists, people who do hypnosis to stop smoking or lose weight or calm one's nerves or whatever it is, they cannot do this kind of research. This is doing abduction hypnosis is something very different. And it takes a different style of learning, and it takes a different experience. And one must first learn about the abduction phenomenon itself. I've had referrals from hypnotists. I've had referrals from psychiatrists and psychologists, all of whom just throw up their hands and just don't know what to do. I've had people have come to me who've already been hypnotized by standard hypnotists, and it's very, very unsatisfactory, and they still don't remember what happened to them, or they'll remember bits and pieces, but it's not put together correctly. And so I said both Bud and I have been very, very careful about how we do things, knowing that we're both amateurs and that we're both learning as we go along in an unprecedented situation. So obviously we're bound to make mistakes. When I first started out, I made every mistake a human being can make in doing hypnosis, and I managed to learn from those mistakes many, many years ago. And we still find ourselves in unprecedented situations, and we're still going to make mistakes. There's just no doubt about that. It's going to happen. But you have to remember that neither Bud nor I charge money for what we do, anybody can quit anytime they want to, it's not like they're heavily monetarily invested in me. In fact, every time somebody does a session with me, it costs me a considerable amount of money because I have to have the sessions transcribed and all the rest of that, and it takes hours and hours of my time. And this woman I gave 2 years of my life to, basically, and all for free, and of course, and so the whole business about hypnosis is just nonsense. It's just foolish. I mean, you have to learn how to do this. Anybody can do hypnosis, and there is a learning curve. If you take the Barney and Betty Hill case, Benjamin Simon was probably one of the best hypnotists in the country. He had absolutely no idea what he was doing when he did the hypnosis of Barney and Betty Hill. He had no idea what he was listening to. He had no idea how he could slot it. Therefore, he did not know what questions to ask. He did not know when to challenge them when they said something that may or may not be true. And because there was just no experience with it, and that's the way most people are. And there's only a few of us left to do a serious hypnosis with this. And I must say that of all the people I've worked with, she has been the one person I'm talking about now has been the only serious problem that I've had.
One out of
150, which is not a bad track record.
Is she an abductee?
Oh, yeah. In my opinion, yes. That's what I think. That's what she's told me. That's what she's been saying, things that nobody else could have said unless they were an abductee. She was not aware of other things that were going on that she was talking about. And she came at it fairly guilelessly. She didn't know much about the subject. She said things that only abductees say, period.
Tell me about the deal that UFO Magazine had a cover story on this, and it was quite a story, caused quite a splash. One of the things that they look at in the article, it's by Jeremy Vianney, is about the agreement that you sign with anybody who you work with, any of these abductees. What are the parameters of that? There's a criticism.
There's several forms of that agreement, and unfortunately, I had her sign an earlier one, basically, the agreement is this. It's a simple agreement that I can use anything she ever says to me in any way whatsoever, as long as I do not tell her name, her address, or anything about her job or her relatives or, children, that sort of stuff. And she also agrees not to play any hypnotic tapes of mine, because I had a bad experience with that, where a guy was just taking tapes from his girlfriend and playing them in public at a library, and I'm on that too. It's you got to have my permission. I'm talking too, so she agrees not to play any tapes of mine, any hypnosis sessions in public, and I also then agree not to reveal anything about her ever, and that sort of thing, and that's the agreement. It's a fairly simple agreement. It's a release, essentially, and it was a release based on a document that Simon & Schuster's attorney sent me when I wrote Secret Life and then The Threat, and so that she signed that. She knew that she broke that agreement, incidentally, and I've never broken my part of it, interestingly enough, but she did break that very quickly.
So basically, you are allowed to write about her as long as you, if you choose to do that, but as long as you don't use her name. And there's some sort of a disclaimer, I think, it mentions in the UFO Magazine article where you say, look, I'm not a professional hypnotist or a psychologist or a therapist.
I say I'm not a professional hypnotist, I'm not a therapist, a professional therapist, I'm not a psychologist, and so forth. And you have to understand that, and that any problems that you might have as a result of remembering these events that happened to you, are not my fault. You're absolving me of all responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. Now, all this comes from experience and so forth, and from advice from attorneys and whoever else was there. And so, it's something that everybody signs, and it allows me to go forward. And then it allows me to just start spending my money on whoever's I'm working with for their knowledge, is what it boils down to, because this is a negative cash flow business. And you cannot make a living off of doing this. It just puts a hole in your wallet. That's all it does.
One of the things that was raised, Dr. Jacobs, was that you had done hypnosis sessions with her by phone and even by instant messenger. I didn't even know you could do it by phone or instant, and certainly not instant messenger. But it sounds outrageous, you know.
Yeah. Well, the problem was she lives in another country, and there was no other person in that country who could do this. Her therapist contacted me originally, asking for somebody, and I said there wasn't anybody. And she the two of them contacted both me and Bud Hopkins, and we talked with her. She seemed fine. She seemed good. And then she asked if she could send us some material. Now, I may get all this wrong, and I'm sure she's listening, and she will immediately email to you exactly what happened. And you know, I said this word wrong, or I said that word wrong. You can sort of count on that happening because of the obsessiveness of her. But she then sent us boxes of material. The boxes were filled with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages, and this is not an exaggeration. I say 600, but Bud says maybe closer to 800 pages of signed documents from her therapist, which had to do with her dreams, which had to do with her experiences, which had to do with all these other things, with bruises and marks on her body that were unexplainable. And Bud took a look at the material, and he just said, well, I won't exactly tell you the word to use, but he just did not think that she was altogether right, so to speak. But I felt sorry for her, and I thought, well, gosh, this poor woman, look at what she's been through, so I'll try to do it. Now, the problem is, how do you do hypnosis with a person who lives in another country? And the answer is, there's only one way, and that's by phone. And now I had done phone hypnosis with other people beforehand, and I thought, God, you know, phone hypnosis, this is crazy stuff. But in fact, there's a whole world of phone hypnosis in the psychological community. There are websites devoted to it and all sorts of stuff going on with phone hypnosis, which is oftentimes used to prevent people who are suicidal, you know, or prevent depression, when people need to talk with a hypnotist for some reason or another, or whatever. But there is this world of phone hypnosis. Now, phone hypnosis is not as good as face-to-face, and I must say that this is the only person that I have never met face-to-face. Every other person who I've ever worked with in this manner, I have met face-to-face and usually done sessions with face-to-face as well. And so, but this is the only one who I've never actually met. And of course, this turned out to be the jackpot. I was a winner with her, and she turned out to have very serious troubles, so to speak.
One of the things that's in this article is that her therapist, the person who worked her before, says she's sane. She's not crazy. I guess as a defense portray her as crazy, that you were going to portray her.
Well, that would allow, what that did was that allowed me to go forward, because if somebody's working with a therapist, I don't go forward unless I get the therapist's agreement. And he said she was fine. The problem here is that I don't know what her ultimate problem was, but as you can tell, she has been obsessing about me for years now, and writing letters to anybody and everybody. Let me put it this way. She got it in her mind. She was writing letters to everybody. She was threatening to call Temple about how I had psychologically abused her, or actually, her first accusation against me was that I had, quote, threatened her family, which was just totally insane, completely crazy. I thought, God, how can this is not something that I do, you know, when I threaten people's families. And then that she dropped that, and then I was ruining her reputation. She had to protect her reputation, but she has... That was also just really sort of bizarre, since in order to have a reputation, you have to have a sort of a public stamp.
And she was anonymous. She's still anonymous. Okay.
Yeah, she's not married. She lives alone. She has very few friends. She doesn't go out. She sits there with a computer and me, basically.
David Jacobs, we're going to take a break right here. We'll come back. I want to get into the idea that you planted something in her brain that that they said that's caused her a lot of trouble. We'll come back. More of our discussion with Dr. David Jacobs. Oingo Boingo, take us into the break. Stay with us, everyone, on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Dr. David Jacobs of Temple University about abduction research, in particular one case that has caused him quite a bit of grief. He's speaking publicly about it for the first time. I have one more question about this lady, the woman who has raised some serious allegations about Dr. Jacobs, and then we'll move on to a larger picture about the abductee scenario. How many there are? Have the numbers changed? Where this phenomenon might be heading? Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. David Jacobs, I appreciate you talking to us about this. I don't want to lose our audience because this is a kind of a complicated thing and we're just grabbing it in bits and pieces here. So I have one more specific question regarding an allegation that she's made, and it's a pretty serious one. And basically it's that while she is under hypnosis, you plant this idea in her head. And the intention is that you are going to sort of get these aliens or hybrids off your own trail, sort of as a protection for you that's not good for her. What do you say to that?
Well, in a way, it's totally untrue, and in a way, it's true. Once again, these are complicated situations that have a background to them, each one. Now, she knew she didn't have multiple personality disorder, and so did I. But she had been telling me that the pressure to stop talking to me was extremely severe on her. In fact, that there was a physical violence against her. There was all sorts of other problems that were going on with her talking to me, and she had to steel herself against them. And it's a long, 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 long story that she...
Them meaning aliens, right? Aliens are giving her a bad time.
Hybrids. Yeah. Hybrids okay. Who were visiting her on a nightly basis, she was saying. And this sounds crazy, but in fact it is within the abduction phenomenon form. It is not something that's outside of the form that we know. So and she lives alone, so the opportunity is there. But the fact is that we had a long session. Towards the end of this session, I said, "Okay, I think that you have multiple personality disorder, and I'm a multiple personality disorder expert. And in my professional opinion, you have multiple personality disorder. And this is an attempt, basically, to save her and also to take some of the pressure off of me. You have to understand that I was getting emails from her in the guise of hybrids, whether she claimed she wrote them later on because she had some sort of sleep disorder problem that is unnamed and undiagnosed and never went to a doctor for, and only occurred, I won't even go into that claim that she made to me. But and also, I was getting calls in the middle of the night. I got 7 in one night. There were 9 and 3 o'clock in the morning, and it would hang up calls from her phone. And there was all sorts of other things happening. So I said, well, maybe I'll just be somebody else that she's talking to and then take the pressure off of both of us. And as soon as I said that to her, you know, I brought her out of it. I said, now, listen, just keep that in the front of your mind. Just keep that in the front of your mind. This is afterwards when we, you know, after hypnosis. So that if they ask you about who I am and all that and, what I'm doing and who you're talking to, just say that, that I'm a multiple personality disorder researcher or something like that. And then, you know, maybe they'll think that and then the pressure will be off a little bit. And she said, she didn't like it so much, but she agreed to do that. So it wasn't as if she's walking around, you know, with multiple personality disorder in her head. The problem here is this. I have tried to put things in people's minds for years and years and years. You'll remember everything that they did to you right afterwards, you know. You will not be afraid. You'll record everything. I have people ask, remember, you will ask a certain question. I want you to ask this question, and I do that under hypnosis to see if nothing like that ever worked. Post-hypnotic suggestions just do not work when it comes to this phenomenon. They do not work. I've never had one that worked. But this wasn't the post-hypnotic suggestion to say that she had multiple personality disorder, which she knew she didn't, and I knew she didn't, but was something that was made to pull off the pressure basically on both of us. And so now she's grabbed onto that. She's you know, and she says, oh, she still has feelings that she has multiple personality disorder. It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. It's just, maybe she does. I can't tell what's going on in her head. What I know is going on in her head is that she is totally and completely obsessed with me. An obsession that is beyond imagination. And she, you know, she formally complained to Temple University about me years ago. She formally complained to the Secretary of Health and Human Services in Washington, D.C., getting no relief from them. She sent pages and pages of MP3s, tons of information to every single member of the history department, including all the retired members. She then sent all this carefully edited material, making me look like a monster who walks among people, seem completely irresponsible and completely reprehensible to every English-speaking researcher in the country, in the world, from what I can tell. I started getting email from Australia, from England, from here and there, saying that what a horrible, horrible person I was. Now, she hadn't even thought of she might have thought of the multiple personality disorder angle at that time. But since that time, she's come up with other things to charge me against, and it's just been awful. And she will not stop. Now, I'm constantly talking to therapists about this, any therapist who knows anything about this kind of behavior, and they all tell me, it'll go away, it'll go away, it'll go away. But it won't, because what happens is there's all sorts of gullible people who have just heard her side of the story, and she makes it seem simple. And it is not simple. It is very complicated. It's as I said, it was 2 years of my life. And they believe her, and that spreads throughout the internet. And then you get people who are, you know, publishing articles in magazines, and there's this whole magazine practically devoted to this, as if this is some sort of a big story. And this is just a very, very troubled woman.
Well, here's why I think it's a big story, and I think why people are interested in it. I mean, if these allegations stick against you, that you have misused your position as an authority figure in this scenario with this abductee, that you have misused hypnosis, that you're planting ideas in their head, that it casts serious questions about the legitimacy of abduction research anywhere that hypnosis has been used, doesn't it? I mean, if it sticks.
Absolutely not. Why would it do that? I mean, this is all unprecedented. We're winding our, working our way through this. Some people are better at doing this than other people. Because she says this doesn't make it true. I mean, you know, if you get a body of people who are all claiming the same thing across the board, with any hypnosis researcher, you know, are saying that they planted bad things in their minds or whatever it is, then maybe, yes, you've got a problem. But if the single person who's obviously got very, very serious problem, who is extremely troubled, is saying something like that, it's just nuts to take that seriously. You know, I may be wrong, obviously, and of course people think I'm nuts anyway. But
well, that's what I meant is, you know, it's a field, it's an endeavor that is viewed with great skepticism by a large chunk of the academic world, the professional world anyway. So yeah, a lot of people would just latch on to anything they can to discredit the whole thing.
That's right. And that's where the diabolical aspect of her relentless assault on me is. She is threatening basically to sully all of hypnosis and all of abductions, and she's claiming she's not an abductee, and I put in, oh, that's another claim, that I put everything in her mind. Of course, that's nonsense. Her claims are so wild, and they're so changing all the time that you know, you have to be very, very gullible to believe it. But the problem is, she is a persuasive believer, and that's an actual phrase that I picked up in reading about certain personality disorders, and she is that. She's a persuasive a believable persuader or persuasive believer or whatever it is, she can persuade you that I am, you know, as I said, a monster who walks among people.
There was a quote.
Anybody can fall into this. This is not something, you know, Bud Hopkins had a serious problem with one person, and years later, that person still is after him in various ways. Here, nobody knows this. It's been years and years, and I know that I'm in for the long haul with this person as well.
Back in your book, Secret Life, I went back and looked at it because I wanted to see what you had written about hypnosis way back then. This is 92, 93. And you wrote, yet experience has shown that most abductees refuse to be led. When asked intentionally leading questions by the hypnotist, they will nearly always reject the suggestion and reply in the negative. I remember you telling me that in an interview as well. So the idea that you could convince her or anyone else to buy this whole scenario, you think is far-fetched.
It's just never happened to me. It's just not something that it is far-fetched. It's just to me, it's just ridiculous. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I've been doing this for so long that it doesn't make any sense to me. It might make sense to other people who have no experience in this, but you cannot let one very troubled person start having you deny the entire abduction phenomenon and the methodology used to obtain abduction accounts. It's overextending your evidence, to say the least, considering everybody has only heard one side of it.
I know that you are basically, you're pretty proud of the work you've done. You feel you've helped a lot of people. In a perfect world, would there be psychologists, psychiatrists, mental health professionals, hypnotherapists, clinical people who'd be doing this work, working with abductees, learning the ropes, instead of you and Bud?
Oh, I hope so. That's my dream. I would hope so. Both Bud and I don't charge money. They do. They also have time constraints. We don't. So we can do a better job than they can, even in the best of worlds, unless they want to give a part of that up and just to do this kind of research. But that would be wonderful. That would be. I've consulted with a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists around the country, trying to tell them how to do this work, how to do this research. They're clueless, of course, in the beginning.
And scared too, right? They don't want to jump into that.
And they are scared. They don't want to jump into it. And a few will, and then they'll withdraw from it for various reasons. Mainly, I think, because it just takes too long. The learning curve is a little too steep, and it takes too much time to learn how to do this.
But let's talk a bigger picture then. You talked about 1,100 cases that you've worked with, or 150 people. Do you see any change in the number of abductees coming forward? I guess you've scaled back your own work in this area, but is the number increased or decreased or changed at all now that you think these hybrids are roaming around among us?
No, it's pretty steady. I still get lots and lots of questionnaires from my website. I still get a lot of people who write to me about their own experiences. I got two today and three questionnaires today. And in order to find my website, they really sort of have to hunt for it and all that, and then to find the questionnaire and all that. But we know that this is a phenomenon that is intergenerational, and that and therefore it goes down through the generations from vertically, so to speak. And we also know that when an abductee marries a non-abductee and they have children and here's where Bud and I differ, I think that all the children will be abductees, and Bud thinks that, well, maybe not all. But whatever it is, it spreads laterally as well. But the question then is, are more people being abducted according to the percentage of people in the society? Because the society has now grown to, 330 million people here in America, and the global population is 6 billion. And so has the percentage of people increased? And we don't know that. We'd have to conduct another poll. The one we did in 1991 is still the only one that's been a major poll to find out how many people were abducted. We at that time found that a minimum, and this was crazily conservative, conservative to the point of just lunacy, but we figured that 2% of the people were having these experiences. In my opinion, it's probably closer to 5%, which is a tremendous number of people, but I do think that it probably is closer to 5% when all is said and done.
Well, that's millions and millions. Do you have a better idea, David, of who they are? Is it just one them? Is it one race? Are they ETs? Do you think they're something something else, something more exotic than visitors from another planet, or is that just too speculative?
You know, one of the odd things is that we really don't know where the visitors from, and we don't know whether they're from another dimension or another universe or in a multi-universe quantum string theory idea, or whether they're just from another planet somewhere in our own galaxy. We just don't know that. And I'm the odd thing is, of course, is that if this were psychological, if people were making it up in hypnosis or whatever it was, we'd know where they were from. They'd be from all over the place. People would say what their names were, where they were from, and why they were here, just like all science fiction movies with aliens have, or most used to have anyway, back in the 50s and 60s. And so consequently, we would know that. But in fact, nobody knows that, and they don't say where they're from, although I've had a couple of indications that they're from this galaxy. But that may be wrong also. So we don't really know, and they do seem to pop in and out of visibility, and maybe they are popping into another dimension. Maybe they're popping into future physics, you know, that we will be able to do eventually as well. I just don't know. Rather than, you know, future physics rather than future dimensions.
And you don't know if it's more than one batch of them, different groups, different competing groups.
Well, that we do know. Because here's how you have to look at this. In terms of the abduction phenomenon, in spite of what people say, everything is resolved into tall, thin, sort of insect-like looking aliens, taller gray aliens, smaller gray aliens, hybrids who help do abduction work, usually ones that are early stage that look more like aliens and all that. And then a few sort of people say that they're reptilian. It is an uncommon situation, although everybody on the internet thinks that it's tremendously common, but it's actually uncommon. And they're all working together, they're all doing the same thing, they're all working for the same goal. You may not see them all together at once in one room, but when a person is abducted, they might see this one or that one. Usually they just see the same ones all the time. But the problem here is that is what we find that goes around the world. This is what people describe around the world. The problem is, you can make, and I've talked about this before, you can make a legitimate argument that we are alone in the universe, that there is no other form of advanced life in the universe. That is a legitimate but stupid argument. However, it is a legitimate argument, in my opinion. And every single thing that anybody has ever found out about the universe in the past couple of decades, you know, agrees with that idea, including the latest planets that are found and that are in a certain temperate zone and all that might have water on them and everything like that. So everything suggests that there might be life elsewhere. So you can make an argument that we are alone, but you cannot make an argument for two. There's us and the people who are abducting us. That's all there is in the universe. If there is two, there's 2 trillion. You know what I mean? You can't say just two. That's not a legitimate argument anymore. At that point, you've opened the gates to millions and billions and maybe trillions. So I can't say who's visiting here, who's coming here, and who's not abducting people. Those aren't the people that I see. I see people who are abductees and who've gone through a filtering system to get to me, and so have a high possibility that they are, although a few of them I've worked with are not. But so I don't know what else is going on, and there might be other beings coming here, you know, and not abducting people. All I can say is that everybody who I've talked to says the same thing, and they describe the same people, same beings.
Dr. David Jacobs, author of Secret Life and the Threat and a lot of other very interesting books. Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you talking about what is an uncomfortable situation for you, and hope you'll keep us in the loop about what else, where else your research leads.
Thanks, George. I appreciate it.
All righty. That was Dr. David Jacobs. Appreciate him coming on. Coming up next, the author of a new book called Ultra-Terrestrial Contact, Philip Imbrogno. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM.